Hi, my women's intuition tells me that your dad is having an affair, and I'm Allison.
I'm flirting with your dad in the basement during our sleepover. I'm Evan.
And we are Cheryl's bitches. We're just both Veronica, man.
Oh, we really saw the same moment and went, yeah.
She was in fine form this episode. I love this episode. Though this is an episode where I remember every single detail.
This episode is so fun. First of all, I love like a little framing device. They're very fun. They're very cute. I think more TV shows should do them more often. Because like it makes the story fun. It's really interesting. I like how they like divided it into parts. So you're like, oh, this is the Betty and Jughead or whatever, Archie and Jughead.
Yeah. The other TV shows don't have the nerve to take on what Riverdale does.
I would say yes, but they use the exact same format in How I Met Your Mother once.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's not like they came up with this, but it's like...
But they didn't execute it in the way that Riverdale does, which is nice.
Mm. So this is chapter 20, Tales from the Dark Side. And as Evan was alluding to, it is not your typical episode that starts with Jughead voiceover. Instead, it's like a little like text on the screen, like kind of like an old-timey like movie, how they might introduce or like frame the situation. And it's like, we have three stories from like whatever people in Riverdale. The Black Hood said he issued this challenge, which was not to sin for 48 hours, which like wasn't his original goal to stop all sin in Riverdale. Like I feel like,
well, I think he was like, this is a test. This is what we can do to test if I'm working. If my job has been done. If there's no sin for 48 hours, I'm done with my job. Like, I've cleaned up Riverdale. If not, obviously, I still have more people to kill.
Yeah, I mean, true. So they're not supposed to sin for 48 hours. He sent that, like, in a letter. And we get the tale of, we're getting three stories of sinners of Riverdale. I think this was a Halloween episode.
It was giving Halloween energy. As I was watching it, I was like, this was the Halloween episode. Like, I just know it was.
I think it was. So the first scene we get, well, we kind of get a little scene before we see whose story is first. We get Betty in bed with Jughead. And he's like comforting her because she's blaming herself for the sugar man's death. Because she thought by pointing him out and just having him arrested, that would spare him from the Black Hood. But it did not work, of course. Next, Jughead gets a call from Penny.
And she says the FP's been jumped in jail by the ghoulies. Jughead can get him out of jail if he has like a little bit of money, because rich people don't stay in prison or something is what she says. Jughead's like, that's great, I literally have $18. And Penny's like, don't worry, I have a plan. If you take this mysterious crate that we won't tell you what's in it to Greendale, I can just, you know, get him out. I'll use the money to get him out from that.
Which I am a little bit confused by her plan, because like, yes, rich people don't stay in prison as long. I'm pretty sure like getting however many dollars he would earn from this would not be enough to like pay off as many people as would be needed to like just get someone out of prison, right?
It was like, I don't think they understand why rich people don't spend as much time in jail. It's like, because they have the lawyers to do this before they are sentenced, not after.
This is Penny. She's the expert serpent lawyer. So, I don't know. That's her plan. Jughead agrees to this because he's really worried about his dad. And she says that he needs to make the delivery before midnight and that he'll need a car because the crate is far too large to take on his bike.
Yeah. And then we get a title card that says Jughead in Archie, which lets us know that this is how the format's going to work.
Yeah.
So this is Jughead's and Archie's story of the day. Jughead asks Archie for help with the crate and is like, you owe me after the stunt you pulled at that race an episode ago or two episodes ago. I don't remember how many episodes ago that was. And Archie's like, fine, I guess. Cheryl, this is in the school hallway. I think that's important to know. It's in the school hallway. Because Cheryl walks in between them and shoves them both aside and says, on my way, Bert and Ernie.
This is iconic. Love that line from Cheryl. We get, like, just overall with the, like, framing device, there's a couple scenes that we kind of see, like, twice, but from two different perspectives. And this is one of them. I'm like, thank God we get to hear this quote twice.
Yeah. I was thrilled.
So Archie does agree because he feels bad about like lying to Jughead and the whole race thing. So they're using Archie's dad's truck. And Archie wants to know some more information, but Jughead's like, don't ask any questions. Like, I don't want you to know what's going on here. Which is funny because like Jughead also doesn't know what's in the crate. So I'm like, I don't think you really know, but he doesn't know the whole context of Penny Peabody and all that. So they go and they get this. It's the crate is like really big. Like, I don't know. It's like as big as like maybe two desks put together.
It's like a full, like when you like look at the like crates of like watermelon in the grocery store, like it's that size crate, not like a normal what I would think of as a crate.
Yes, that's a good comparison. So they put it in the truck and Archie, they're like driving, heading off to Greendale, and Archie's questioning Jughead about like why he decided to become a serpent, because it seemed to have created a few issues in the recent days past.
Yeah, and it's time for a little bit of homoeroticism. And Archie launches into a story about how he has this idea, like vision for the future, that after high school they won't go to college, him and Jughead will just both move to New York together and live in the East Village, and he'll be a musician and Jughead will be a writer and they'll like do their art. Which I had so many thoughts. I was like, first of all, has Archie been watching too much Rent? I think he's been watching too much Rent.
This is Archie's weird dream. If you don't know the lore, we need to like do a full like study up on all the lore, and like we should do a bonus episode about that. I think so. Just highest level overview. The creator of Riverdale wrote a play about Archie Andrews, and like it was called Archie's Weird Dream, and it was like a stage play unofficial. Well, yeah, he did not have the rights to use these characters, but he just wrote this play. He got a cease and desist letter so that it could not be performed, but the overall plot was like Archie figuring out his sexuality and then indeed moving to New York City to live with Jughead. So like this is clearly like a reference to this. I'm sorry, one, Archie has not done music at all this season, so I'm like, how is this still your dream?
I also was watching this, I was like, Archie, do you still play music? You haven't done that in like half a season.
I do have a lot of questions on like, I don't know who is paying the rent of this apartment. Like if you're both unemployed, like it just doesn't seem like a great plan.
Like, is it still the 80s and therefore like it doesn't really matter because the rent is super cheap? Like, I don't understand. Anyways, Jughead, I guess, is also confused as we are, and says, I'm pretty sure the East Village doesn't exist anymore.
He also asks, where are Betty and Veronica in this? And Archie says, they're roommates. Of course they're roommates.
Of course they're.
And they were roommates.
And they were roommates. Anyways, I was watching this scene, and apparently in my notes, I was just over it. Because I wrote, I think if any of these characters moved to New York, they would instantly get murdered.
Yeah, probably. Overall, like, just peak homoeroticism. Like, this is kind of, like, out of nowhere, because we haven't seen Archie and Jughead together that much recently. And, like, Archie's like, I don't want to go to college. I just want to live with you forever, Jughead. Like, okay, damn.
It's so out of pocket, especially because, like, two episodes ago, they were fighting about how Archie was running a hate group against the gang. Jughead just joined.
And then Betty sent Archie to dump Jughead. Oh my gosh. Anyways,
Archie, while he was dumping Jughead, was like, I wonder if this is going to hamper my plans to move to New York.
Damn it. He's
damn it, Betty.
Live with me forever anymore. What? Like, this is...
Anyways, then they blow a tire. And... there isn't a spare in the truck, and so Archie's like, we should call Triple C.
Big Riverdale brand name. Well, I need, like, a bell to ring every time.
We need a sound effect.
Is that good?
Jughead then says that they can't do that because they have a crate of mysterious illegal things in the truck. He's like, let's call Betty. And then Archie's like, no, we can't bring her into this. So then they decide collectively that they're going to call Kevin.
Thanks. I'm sorry. Our poor baby Kevin. We were talking about how he has no respect for himself last episode. More stuff happens to him this episode. This is just so fucking rude. Like, you don't want to drag Betty into this, but they're like, yeah, just call Kevin.
I think they know that Kevin has no respect for himself and will just say yes. Because he's looking for any form of human connection.
They'll be like, I heard you guys are moving to New York after graduation. Like, can I get in on this?
Need a third roommate? No? Are you sure?
So before they call Kevin, another truck pulls up behind them. And he's like, I don't have a spare tire to give you. And Jughead's like, we need a ride to Greendale. And the guy's like, yes, you have money. And for that $18, the only money that Jughead has to his name, he agrees to take just one of them. So just Jughead and the crate to Greendale. Don't do this, kids. Don't get into
cars with strangers. You shouldn't do this. In the episode, they're like, this is not a good idea.
Yeah,
anyways, but he does. So Jughead agrees. Archie's loading the crate into the truck and notices there's, like, a weird tarp in the back. And the guy's just like, don't look under the tarp. So dude is creepy.
He, like, they're talking while they're driving. And the guy, like, he says he looks like Jason Blossom, which is just like a little creepy thing to say. And it's also like, okay, oh, interesting. He's listening to, like, this preacher that must be like a local preacher on the radio station that supports the Black Hood and says that the Black Hood is doing God's work, which I love. One, that the local preachers are just like, maybe this is for the best, you gotta kill the sinners, man. I'm like, I think that's what Christians are supposed to believe, but okay. And he says that this whole Black Hood situation reminds him of the Riverdale Reaper. What is that?
The Riverdale Reaper? We don't know. And that is Jughead. So Jughead's like, huh, who is that? Tell me more about it. And then Archie did call Triple C. And he got the tire fixed and the guy's driving away. And Archie like sees a deer across the road and is like, I should go follow Jughead.
It's a really like creepy like deer that looks a little like mutilated. So, and I love that it, while he's making this decision, he like sees a sign and the sign is literally just like Riverdale this way, Greendale this way. And you see him like walk towards Greendale. Or, like, I'm like, okay.
The nice. Sign is in the middle of the road, nowhere near like an intersection of any kind. Like, why is this sign here?
It's like you're already going, like just to confirm you're headed in the right direction. So Jughead and the random man stop at a gas station and the guy's like, okay, fill her up, I'll go inside and pay. Jughead's filling up the car and decides to look under the tarp, which he was told not to do, and there's just like this dead rotting deer. So okay, none of this is relevant. Can I just say literally none of this is like actually relevant in the end? So it's like, I'm like, what is happening? The guy is like, I'm starving. There's like a cafe right next to the gas station that he's gonna eat at, and Jughead's like, no, we gotta go. He's like, he's on the clock. He needs to get there before midnight, but the guy is like his ride. So I guess he has no choice but to go in. And the guy orders like a steak and is like absolutely mutilating it when he's cutting it. Like, it is so aggressive.
Yeah. Then Jughead uses this opportunity to ask more about the Reaper. And the creepy guy explains that there was a family living near Fox Forest. And a guy broke in and shot the whole family with a shotgun and there were no survivors. And this is that he was Don the Riverdale Reaper. And Jughead has obviously piqued his interest in this, as he is currently fighting a serial killer as well. And so he asks if the Reaper was ever caught. And the guy's like, no, there's different theories on what happened. Some people say he was like killed by a vigilante mob in Pickens Park. Some say he got on a train and went to California and started, quote, praying to the devil.
Nice.
Which was funny. And then some say he never left Riverdale. And it's like, okay, dude.
Yeah, so Jughead's like, maybe the Black Hood, maybe the Riverdale Reaper is the Black Hood. Well, the guy is like, I'm not saying they're necessarily the same person, but there's like a cycle to things in this world. And he is now done, gets up to go, and or no, the waitress drops off the check and he says, my friend's gonna pay for me. But Jughead has no money. So it becomes a whole thing, and like the waitress is gonna call the cops because they're trying to dine and dash. And it was all because, you know, they're sinners who are bringing a mysterious crate in the middle of the night. God knows what's happening. He's like, they're sinners, whatever, basically trying to trap them here or get them, you know, get them cops to arrest them or something. But just in the nick of time, Archie shows up. And luckily, Archie has a debit card. When he's like, here, take my Chime card. And like Four Seasons, that's what I thought of. Because he's like, you take debit, right? Here, take my Chime card. Archie pays, the guy leaves, and Jughead's like, thank you for saving me.
Which, okay. I guess they like, probably didn't accept like 100% rule out. But if I was Jughead, would be like, after all of this, that guy is the Black Hood, right? Like, we all know that's the Black Hood, right? That random guy who was on the highway.
Wouldn't the Black Hood kill them if they're sinners?
Question him.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, if I was Jughead, I would have some thoughts.
No, because they know he's a white man in his, what did they say? Tony was like,
we're getting there. We are getting there. A white man in his 30s. Anyways, so Jughead thanks Archie for saving him. And he's like, oh shit, it's 11:52. So they speed to the location in Greendale. They have to drop the crate off. Someone comes up with someone in a wheelchair as they're unloading the crate. And it's a creepy lady in a barrette in an, which she's wearing, okay. Her outfit was kind of a, like a sleigh to me. She's in all black. Like kind of military-esque garb. She has a, it reminds me of like revolutionary clothing in like a communist revolution type sense. She also has a black beret on and a thick Russian accent.
Yes, she says.
And I love her.
She is a sleigh. She's like, you're late. And she's like, these are my new, which of you is Jughead Jones, my new delivery guy? And Jughead's like, it's supposed to be a one-time thing. So Jughead is like freaking out. And she reveals that the serpents are taking over the drug trade from the ghoulies. So like Pity orchestrated this whole thing. And Jughead is very nervous because he like, she knows his name. So he's in trouble.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be like a regular drop off. It's not just the one time thing that Penny told him it would be. Then Jughead and Archie debrief about the night they've had at Pops. And Jughead is like, thank you so much again to Archie. And Archie's like, wow, we've all kind of become bad people since the serial killer showed up. It's almost like he's making us bad. I'm like, okay, Archie.
Okay, you did a lot of shit last season, Archie.
That's okay. Kind of what I was thinking.
But okay. Yeah. Jughead asks if like this, the murdered family could potentially be a lead in the Black Hood case. And he asks Archie if he wants to look into it at the library tomorrow. And Archie rejects him. And it is so sad. I'm like, oh, and there's literally a breakup song playing in the background. I thought that was pretty good.
It was good. Archie before is like, Jughead, you have to get out of this. And Jughead's like, I'll try to get out of it. And it's not entirely clear if Jughead is talking about the deliveries or the serpents in general. And he's like, Archie's like, do you need a ride home? And he's like, no, I have to go pick up my dad, or I have to go talk to my dad. And visiting hours like start soon. It's almost morning, so I'll just go on my own. And then the phone starts ringing at Pops.
And then we see Jughead goes to visit FP, and FP is completely fine. He was not jumped by any ghoulies.
Jughead confronts Penny about the whole situation, and she shows him a video that she has of Jughead and Archie doing the delivery, so dropping the crate off. And Jughead's like, why are you doing this to me? And Penny says that FP made her a promise that he didn't keep, and so in her opinion it is now Jughead's debt to deal with.
Yeah, so Jughead is fucked.
And Jughead's kind of fucked.
And then it's like, Josie! That's all we get to see from Jughead this episode. So the next story is about our dear girl, Josie, which I'm like, we've barely seen her this season. So this
I was happy to see Josie got a bigger role this episode.
Okay, this whole story, I'm sorry. I'm so glad they reveal let's give a bit more context. So we see Josie like practicing in the school. She, like the Pussycats aren't there. She's just kind of playing by herself. And the janitor walks in on her practicing, and he's like, I'm going to like lock up, but you know what to do, slip out the side door. So this has become like a regular thing. And she's kind of friends with the janitor to let her do this. So Josie goes to leave, and she kind of hears sounds like maybe someone else is in the school. So she kind of freaks out and like heads on home.
Yeah. Josie gets back home, and we find out that Mayor McCoy has actually moved them into the Five Seasons.
I was like, I'm sorry, did they realize they're like, we've never seen Josie's home and we have the five season set, so like let's just make this easier for ourselves.
Let's just do that. I don't know. Anyways, but so she says it's to make them feel safer because they don't exactly feel the safest at their personal home. And Mayor McCoy says that Josie needs to be home before dark from now on. And they get into a bit of an argument about it. And Mayor McCoy also says that she is considering giving her like a security detail to make sure that Josie's extra safe. And Josie says, I don't need a bodyguard. I'm not Whitney. Not yet, anyway.
Wrote that one down, too. That was good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Josie.
Yeah, so she is not supposed to walk the streets and alone anymore and has to get home before dark. The next day at school, Josie's, like, talking to Cheryl, and she's, like, talking about how she's stressed. And when she's stressed, she sometimes loses her voice. And like, why is she stressed? Because she's thinning by going behind the Pussycat's back to like try to have a solo career, which I'm like, I'm an expert, but I don't think that's a sin. Like, I mean, I guess it's like being selfish or like maybe greedy, but it's like, okay, we're kind of getting into the weeds here. Why would the Black Hood know this much about like,
also, why would the Black Hood care? Like, I'm sorry.
I don't know what's happening.
In Riverdale, like, going back on your bandmates, a very, like, not, like, good thing to do, but, like, normal thing happens in the world of music, especially, like, a lot, I think, from what I've heard. In the grand scheme of the things happening in Riverdale, not a high priority. Not a high priority.
Cheryl, so the reason why she has this opportunity is because Cheryl sent a video of their milkshake performance to a producer, and he offered just Josie studio time, which I'm like, why was that the thing that convinced them? And also a demo of them playing milkshakes. They were seeing that on the roof of Pops. Like, who was recording that? Like, I can't imagine the quality was that good.
And you know, it worked though. It worked. He said, ooh, they made milkshakes slow.
But I only want Josie. Fuck them all.
I only want Josie.
Fuck the rest.
That song, entirely harmonies. The whole thing was just harmonies. But you know who I want? Just Josie.
Just Josie. In Josie's opening up her locker, and there is a stuffed bear on the top shelf, and it's from Cheryl's like, oh, your secret admirer sent something else again. So I guess this is like a recurring event. And she's like, oh, I got to change my combination. I'm like, how would someone know your combination? Like, I don't know. What?
At the end of high school, I didn't even know my locker combination.
I know. I'm like, who is like, and this is something that I feel like happens in TV shows where like characters know their like best friend's locker combination mm-hmm. or something like that. I'm like, has that ever happened? Like, why would your friend need to know your locker combination? I don't know. But there is a bear from a secret admirer, so.
Yeah. And there's a note on the stuffed bear that says, I'll be watching you.
Which, why are all these gifts and notes so threatening?
It's so threatening. And Josie's just like, ugh, this is the third one this week.
Like, oh, I hate being so beautiful that random people are just stalking me. This is inconvenient. Like, she's winning the I don't give a fuck war.
She is truly winning the IDGAF war.
I said Cheryl is slaying in a keyhole top that, which I think it was actually part of a dress that was like patterned and knitted and sleeveless, but man, those keyhole top, those were a look. I still have one that I don't wear, but I'm like, I'm gonna keep this because if it's ever remotely acceptable to wear again, I will be wearing it.
So yeah. Then Josie is practicing in the music room again, and who arrives but Chuck Clayton, a character we have not thought about in about a season.
Can I say we fully said, I know we did him like for Kinsey Scale, his last episode, because we're like, he doesn't come back. He doesn't come
back. He's never coming back. Anyway, so he's here. And Josie's like, he tries to ask Josie out. And Josie's like, no. Are you the one putting stuff in my locker, though? And he's like, I could be. And she's okay.
But she's like, gross. And I'm like, yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, that's gross. And then she says, sorry, Chuck, I don't date. Especially not chauvinistic, misogynistic harassers of women like you.
She ate him up. Harassers of women. Okay.
Go off. So much happening.
Go off, Kendall Roy.
We're fully, like, strongly with this episode entering Riverdale's feminism era.
Oh, we already entered that when they all just beat up Nick Sinclair.
Oh, that's true. It's been happening. This season is then the full pro. Because it also happened with I beg your misogynistic pardon.
I beg your misogynistic pardon? These are your bitches?
Your bitches. So yeah, we are fully in Riverdale's misogynistic era, or misogynistic feminist era.
Misogynist. You're me in my misogynistic era. So Josie tells Cheryl about this interaction with Chuck, and she's like, good, like, don't waste your time, he's a dirtbag, which fair assessment based on what they know about him. And Josie's like, well, she's like, do we want to practice after school? And Josie says, no, she needs to steam her throat instead. And Cheryl's a little upset. And she's like, Cheryl, you're being so controlling about my career and all of this stuff. And Cheryl says that she's like putting all this time and effort into this because Josie saved her. And so she feels like she's trying to like pay it back to her.
Then after the steam, Val and Melody confront Josie because they found out that she's writing music without them from a note in their locker. I thought was a note to think. And
can we pause and have a conversation about this?
Yes. I wrote down a quote I need to say eventually.
Okay. I wrote it down too. But... just to pause, because this is the first thing that I think is like truly like the other notes were just kind of weird. This one is just like truly whoever's doing this is a bad person. Like, it's not just being a secret admirer, right? She's like interfering with their just interfering. It's revealed in this episode, which when I was watching this whole thing, I was so scared that it wasn't gonna be revealed this episode. So we'd have to like pretend like we don't.
But, me too.
Sorry. Fast forward like 10 minutes and it is Cheryl who is like, and we'll explain how we know this, but like it's Cheryl that's doing all of this. We know this. So it's like, and it makes sense. Like she would know Josie's locker combination. She would, I guess, want to break up the Pussycats just to like isolate Josie from her friends. Like this is when it gets like very much like, this is not okay behavior. Like that's not good.
Things get even worse later, but this is just not okay behavior.
And this is kind of the start of a whole plot line that we'll get about like Cheryl like recognizing her sexuality, which I feel like how it ends up is decently. The way they decided to start all of this with this, like they were like the Halloween episode, we're gonna have Cheryl be incredibly like scary and creepy to Josie. It's not great.
They said that's what happens when you become a lesbian.
She started her rat, and man, there's other stuff to discuss. So continue.
There's a lot happening. Anyways, so they're having a conversation, and Val says, Josie, women are supposed to treat each other better than this. It was fun.
We're sisters and you clawed us in the back. That's the second sentence of that. Which I just like, women are supposed to treat each other better than this. Like, as if you're in a band with like guys, they also shouldn't betray you to like pursue a solo career. Like, what does it really have to do with being a woman?
Implication is like, women are supposed to have each other's backs. It's like, but people should just have each other's backs.
Josie clawed them in the back. Yeah, so they're like, Josie, you're on your own. And yeah, they do tell her that it was from notes in their locker that they found this out. So
just, I'm still not over the implication that like, we're not men. We're supposed to treat each other with like decency and respect. You can't expect a man to do
that. What? I don't think we learn much. Well, we learn some more about, yeah, we learn a little bit more about some of their background. I'm like, I feel like they're all like just part of like a girl group of like, they probably all have shitty fathers, like just from based on all of their interactions. And we know that's kind of, that's true for Josie at least. So like, I feel like this is their solidarity, what their, how their solidarity comes from.
Anyways, then Josie is practicing late and leaving school late again. She hears a noise as she's leaving, but oh, it's Josh Chuck. So he's there and she's like, oh my God, you scared me. And he ends up offering to give her a ride home, but they need to make one stop first. And that stop is at Pops. So they go to Pops together.
He got her. He got her. And he's like, they're sitting together and she's like, you can't, this doesn't count as a date. Like, you can't trick me into this. And he says that he is trying to change and that he's going to church and taking art classes, which like, you got him. If you're going to church and taking art classes, you can't possibly be a bad person. But I love that Pop comes in and immediately like corroborates his story, because he like goes to their table and was like refilling their drinks or something. And he's like, Chuck, so nice seeing you at church on Sunday. I'm like, damn. And Josie asked if that was staged and he's like, no. But I'm like, it does seem staged because that was perfect timing for him.
It seems so staged. Also, in the same sentence, he like throws shade at Josie, he's like, it's so great to see you at church. Maybe you'll get that heathen to go with.
So Josie has no high ground to stand on right now.
Go to church. Which is obviously a bad person. Anyways. Chuck convinces Josie to start dancing with her and Pops, which she's like, that's weird, but then agrees to it. And like, yeah, sorry, if I walked into a diner and there was just like a couple grinding, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? I need to leave.
It was kind of cute though, because it was like a 50s song on the radio and they were dancing. It was kind of cute. But of course, Mayor McCoy walks into Pops, the only restaurant in town at that exact moment. And she's like, why are you like on a date with this guy? Like, she obviously knows what Chuck has done. So she bans Josie from seeing him ever again.
She also tells, sorry, this line was very funny to me. She says, check your phone. Josie's like, what's going on, Mom? And she says, check your phone, young lady. I've been texting you for hours and you're in here doing the twist. It's like, what era are we in?
Of all the crimes, like, that, I feel like Josie could be doing worse stuff than like dancing at a local diner.
Josie has actively done worse things this season. She like did what we can assume is supposed to be like the equivalent of bath salts or something.
Yeah, but no, this is over the line. So they go home and Mayor McCoy is like, you've been acting out recently, young lady, whatever. And she reveals that she's very nervous because she's been receiving a lot of hate because of like her lack of like handling the South Side and all the centers of Riverdale, and people are like being emboldened by the Black Hood to be hateful to her, and she's recently started receiving death threats. So that is very scary. And one of the most recent letters mentioned Josie. So that's why she's like been very intense with Josie. And Sheriff Keller is also there. And he asked Josie if she's received any letters or anything like that recently. And Josie says no, even though she has been receiving suspicious gifts.
Yeah. Then Josie talks to Cheryl about what her mom was talking to her about. And Cheryl says she's disappointed in Josie for going on a date with Chuck.
Focused on the important parts. Josie's like, oh my gosh, like someone threatened my life in this letter. And Cheryl's like, did you go out with that boy? God. This is, you know, we talk about a lot about how like some of the Riverdale plot lines don't fit the like age that these characters are supposed to be. But this is a 15-year-old girl realizing she's a lesbian.
Not some of the actions, but like this moment, it tracks.
Yeah.
Anyways, Josie's like, no, he's trying to be a better person. And Cheryl's like, oh, is that why he's low-key stalking you? And you didn't tell Sheriff Keller? Also, the whole time, okay, so we mentioned the janitor earlier. Under this whole scene, there's just like awkward cuts to the janitor like pretending to mop in the student lounge as they're having this conversation.
Sus. The janitor is incredibly sus. And yeah, so then Josie opens her locker again and there's a new gift. It is a drawing. Is this the drawing yet, or does it
say? So it's not in her locker. Okay. They go into the music room. And on a table in the music room, there is, like, a black gift box and a rolled-up piece of paper. Like, the, like, stereotypical, like, rolled-up paper you'd find in, like, a bottle at sea. They open the paper, and there's a drawing of Josie. And above it, it says, if I can't have you, no one can.
Deeply.
Sorry, just need to say it. And then they open the box. And in the box, there's a heart. There's just like a heart.
Cheryl's like, this is a threat.
They've all been threats.
This is so problematic, but it's also like something about knowing that it's Cheryl and like, what can Cheryl do? Like, it like makes it funny, but it's just like, girl,
it's so messed up.
Not the way to deal with things.
Oh, but yeah, it's so messed up because you're sitting there and Cheryl has to like pretend to be shocked because she's the one who's doing this, and knowing that in the background you're like, oh yeah, I see that, I see her doing this. She's like, oh my god, that's so threatening.
She's like, it is so sick and twisted that someone would do such a thing.
Anyway, so then Cheryl and Josie go to confront Chuck about the heart, which we find out is a pig heart. And Cheryl says, the Black Hood weren't clearly an old white dude. I'd say you'd be a prime suspect.
I love that she's using things that she did to try to call Chuck a serial killer. Like... Anyway, the janitor,
someone who has been falsely accused of murder, she's like, yeah, let's accuse this man.
Yeah, well, have you considered, Evan, that he's trying to date her girlfriend, Josie?
So real, so true, her straight girlfriend.
at during this confrontation, one, this is when she is like storming into the student lounge to find Chuck, and she's like, get out of the way, Bert and Ernie, again. And then she's confronting Chuck, and then the janitor walks up and is like, is it true? Like, is Chuck the one sending these like suspicious gifts? Cheryl's like, literally, Josie is like, he could also be the one sending your mom those threatening letters.
Oh,
adding another baseless accusation on top of everything.
So it's like deeply implied that the letters are supposed to be like pretty racially coded, and Chuck is also black.
Yes.
Cheryl really is just, she's doing the most.
Josie says that it is true and that it's Chuck, and Chuck is like freaking out, and he's like, I didn't do this, because he didn't. So it's kind of upsetting, and the janitor like takes him to the principal. So yeah.
And Sheriff Keller talks to Mayor McCoy and Josie and says that Principal Weatherby talked to Chuck, and Chuck has agreed to stay away from Josie from now on. But he also says that he doesn't think Chuck is the one sending the notes. And everyone's like, oh.
Because he found no evidence that he's like the one that left the things in the lockers. And I'm like, wow, Sheriff Keller finally solved one case. Or got at least one thing right about one case.
Did his job for once. Anyways, then Josie is playing in the school late again. And she hears a noise and turns around into the black hood, and he slits her throat. And then she jumps out of bed, and we realize it's just a dream.
Okay. Yeah, I think we all knew that.
I was watching it, and I was like, what? This is a dream. Like, but it took me a second to be like, huh?
Huh? And then last scene of this story, we see Cheryl drawing a creepy picture. One, her art style is just also very creepy to me, but she's drawing a picture of her and Josie together, because she's the one. Because she is the secret admirer, leaving all these very threatening things. So, oh, Cheryl.
Yeah.
I also definitely thought this was going to be, because we watched the next episode. I definitely thought this was going to be dropped, but it is not dropped.
No, I also thought it was going to be dropped, and then it's not.
Because I don't really know what happens with Cheryl and Josie specifically. Like, I don't remember that. So, like,
but it was dropped, and it literally only came up, like, offhand a few times after this. And there's one Cheryl time where it does come up.
What I do remember is Cheryl does not really face any consequences for any of it. So, yeah.
And later in the season, or later in the series, it just seems that Josie is mildly annoyed that this happened.
That is true. I mean, she just... Okay, so in conclusion of this story, I feel like this was, like, I do understand what they were going for, because they were trying to write this, like, creepy episode, and they wanted to, like, start this plot point for Cheryl, because it goes on through the rest of the season, and it's like, it would need to be introduced in some context. But I feel like this is, like, relying and reverting to like very stereotypical and very like negative stereotypical like implications. So confused about the Riverdale writers thinking that this was the way to do this.
Yeah.
But it was entertaining.
It was entertaining. It was a good series. Anyways, on to the final section of the episode. It's Betty and Veronica time. So we are back to Jughead and Betty cuddling when Betty gets the idea and is like, no, that doesn't make sense. So Jughead goes to leave, as we saw, and Betty's like, well, maybe. And so she is talking to Kevin in the hallway at school. And Kevin is talking about how his dad is under a lot of pressure because the town is kind of turning on him because he hasn't caught the Black Hood yet. And Kevin says that his dad is not eating or sleeping and is heading out at weird hours of the night. Mm. Which Betty is like, about.
Betty and Veronica are like immediately sus. And Betty thinks, of course, that he's a Black Hood. And Veronica thinks that he's having an affair. So that is basically the story of they're both trying to prove their respective hypotheses. And this one's fun too. I like
this one. This one is very fun. Before we move on though, I like to note that when Betty and Veronica are discussing their theories after Kevin has left, Veronica says, poor Kevin, he's like a character in a lost Tennessee Williams play. Which,
true.
I want to know what Tennessee Williams play Veronica is reading to make her think that this story aligns with that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So Veronica is arguing that he's looking for comfort, like his wife's away, so he's probably having an affair. And Betty's like, well, the sugar man was killed in the sheriff's station, so it must have been the sheriff. I'm like, okay. I guess. And
so Veronica's like, no, he's clearly just having an affair. And Betty says, well, maybe he's both.
I mean, I'm never admitting she's wrong. She's could be both. And Veronica's like, no, like Kevin needs a friend right now, not your groundless suspicions, which I'm like, this is bold as hell coming from you, Veronica, who's accused your parents of literally every single crime that's happened in Riverdale. Like, groundless suspicions, that's your whole thing.
Real. Veronica's never been one to not throw around a groundless suspicion, but you know.
Also throwing around groundless suspicions about him having an affair. Like,
it's like she's not even like, no, like we just need to be here for Kevin. Like, let's not dig into it. She's like, no, I'm right.
So she decides to try to prove this by like asking Kevin, like, we should have a sleepover, and she says, I've never been to your house, so that they can have it at Kevin's house instead, so she can investigate. I'm like, of course Veronica's never stepped foot in Kevin's house.
I was like, it's on brand for their friendship, or, you know, maybe lack thereof, that Veronica has never, like, hung out with Kevin at his own place. Anyways, then Betty is interviewing Sheriff Keller, and she's like, I'm writing a new article for the Blue and Gold, but really she's just trying to figure out if he's the Black Hood. And so she's like, how exactly did the Black Hood get in here to kill Mr. Phillips? Like, that's embarrassing for you. And Sheriff Keller's like, yeah, he physically broke in. The guy here was like asleep, and it's bold. And then he like takes Betty around the station and shows her the door that's been pried open, and it's like, and this is how it happened. And Betty's still like, sus.
Which is fair, because I'm like, okay, yeah, if I was the sheriff and was doing this, I would also break a door so people didn't realize it had to be someone that had a key. So like, doesn't really prove anything, but. So Betty is still sus. Veronica is at Kevin's now. And Kevin is like explaining the rules to some board game. And Veronica is not at all entertained. Because of course, like even in this scene, they're going to be like, Kevin's so boring. And Veronica is only having a sleepover with him so she can investigate. So then she's like, I'm going to go get a drink.
What? Get on. Oh, I was just watching the scene and I was like, Kevin, you just need to be on that weird subset of gay Twitter where it is exclusively men posting thirst traps with captions about Pokemon. He would thrive.
He's just like a little
Nerdy
boy.
But like, LOL, I'm such a gamer. You know how they spell gamer with like G-A-Y?
Nice.
he would thrive on gamer Twitter.
Yeah, I feel like he goes after, like, he looks for friendships in the with the, like, wrong kind of people. Like, you can just be a little nerdy. It's okay. But Veronica's like, I'm thirsty. Like, can I go get a beverage? And she's like, do you want anything? And he says, oh, a glass of milk. Which, I'm sorry to any of, like, the adults that drink milk. But I find it extremely embarrassing when someone drinks milk.
It does feel a little bit, like, childish to just drink a straight glass of milk. But, you know, I'm not judging you if you do. Anyways, so she does this because Betty texted her. So she's calling Betty as she walks downstairs. And Betty says, I can't believe you're having a sleepover with Kevin in the middle of an investigation, or without me, in the middle of an investigation. And Veronica's like, I'm not in the, this is not an investigation. I'm trying to help a friend deal with his father's infidelity.
Betty's like, well, while you're snooping, can you add finding evidence that he's a black to your list?
Both so terrible.
So funny. So she, like, can't get into the office. So, like, Betty's like, check out the basement. She starts walking down to the basement, even though it's creepy. And she hears, like, sad, like, grunting sounds. And that's suspicious to her. And I'm like, is that really, like, what would that be evidence of? I don't know. But it is actually Sheriff Keller is down there working out. So, yeah. And she's like, oh, I'm looking for juice or diet soda. Saved it.
She truly saved it. Anyways, then she starts flirting with Sheriff Keller. She's like, oh, I didn't know you worked out. He's like, yeah, I do. Like, it's something I like to do. Keeps me, like, in shape, does discipline or whatever. And she's like, oh, yeah, Archie Andrews better watch out.
Possess her to say such a thing. Like, she's literally dating Archie at this moment. Like,
it's so out of pocket, and Sheriff Keller's clearly, like, just trying to get this woman, like, girl to leave him alone. He's like, yeah. She's like, it must help you so much on your jobs. Anyways, then she asks where Kevin's mom is, and we find out that Kevin's mom is in stationed at a naval base in Bahrain. So,
yeah, okay. I guess. I
don't know if Kevin's mom couldn't just be dead. Like,
well, because then it wouldn't be an affair, genius.
No, I know, but, like, she hasn't existed up until this moment.
Yeah, I assume she was just, like, not in the picture at all based on, like, the first season.
The first season makes it seem like she's just never been a part of their lives.
Yeah, so, but no, she is there. Kevin walks down and is like, what's going on? Because of course this whole time he doesn't pick up on any of this.
Also, Sheriff Keller never, like, puts on a shirt. To be, everyone needs to know, he is, like, fully shirtless this whole time and, like, glistening in sweat. And ripped, just so ripped. Anyways.
Okay, Veronica. Veronica, like, stays up to watch, like, to see if he leaves in the middle of the night, and he does drive off in the middle of the night. So she, like, meets up with Betty at Pop's, and Veronica tells Betty that, like, he left in the middle of the night, and Betty's like, that confirms my theory, because she whips out a newspaper and is like, a jingle addict got hit by a train last night, which I guess means that someone shoved them into the train tracks. Someone, meaning the Black Hood, meaning it has to be Sheriff Keller, because he was out of the house when it happened. And Veronica is not convinced by that airtight logic.
Veronica's literally like, he probably was out of his mind and stumbled in front of the train. And Betty's like, no, he was clearly pushed.
This, his only title is apparently Jingle Jangle Attic. So I feel like probably was an accident.
Anyways, and then Betty's like, but it's also very suspicious that his like office doors are locked in his house. And I sat there and I went, Betty, literally last season, your dad broke into his house, got into his office, and stole his murder board. I think he might have stepped up home security after that.
And that's not,
that suspicious.
It's not suspicious at all, especially considering the fact that like Veronica was over there as a guest. So like if your kid is gonna have a friend over, you're gonna like lock the doors that you don't want them going in.
You're gonna lock the doors, you're gonna go mowing it, especially when you're investigating the serial killer terrorizing your town. Like,
yeah, that had, you probably have evidence that has to do with people that she knows. Like, you shouldn't break that confidentiality.
You definitely have evidence that, like, is only being kept within your department so that you can, like, corroborate things. Cause that's always, like, a thing, is it's like they knew things that only the killer would have known. And so.
Yeah.
It's like, so, it's very logical as to why this door would be locked, Betty, including your dad last season.
Betty decides that she is going to see the evidence for herself. So she breaks in to their house, which is very easy because they have a key under like the flower pot on the porch, which I'm like, you're literally a cop. Like,
you should know better.
Yeah, if someone broke it, clearly he did not up home security because
he did not.
It was very easy for her to get in. So she breaks into the office as well. And what do we see? Another murder board, which I guess this would make, like, it at least makes Betty suspicious. But it's like, again, didn't we do this last season? He is a cop. It makes sense for him to have this stuff. But she still digs around and finds in one of the drawers a black hood. Evidence?
Anyways, then Sheriff Keller walks in and is like, Betty, what are you doing here? So the next scene, Hal is picking up Betty from the police station. And Sheriff Keller is honestly being very chill and is like, no, like, I understand how she got where she got, like with the conclusion she like came upon based off of what she saw. She saw this hood in my desk. It was actually the one that Reggie wore when he spooked Archie, and then I found in Archie's locker because he kept that for some stupid reason no one knows. I understand how she got there. Here are my like log books of like what I'm doing because I'm a police officer and have to keep track of that. At all hours, proving that I was doing things while literally everyone the Black Hood killed was killed.
Yeah. She did. Hal says that with whatever, an overactive imagination, I could see how whatever you get there. And I'm like, this is very, very Betty, but also like, okay. Let's not disrespect
her. Sheriff Keller was pretty chill for. Yeah. Betty literally breaking into his home.
And he says that he won't tell Kevin about any of this because it would break his heart that she accused his dad of being the serial killer. Fair enough. So Kevin never finds out about any of this.
Also, is Sheriff Keller the best parent in the show? I think he might be.
Absolutely, because like the only bad things that he's, well, I guess we'll get to a possibly bad thing that he's doing in a second, but like the only really bad thing we've seen him do is like be like maybe like a tiny bit homophobic to Kevin, but mostly like he like, I don't understand you, like whatever. And he was more worried about the fact that Kevin was cruising in the woods, so like I feel like
while there's a serial killer on the loose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like every time he's been kind of homophobic, it's been like out of a desire to like get to know Kevin better or protect Kevin.
Yeah.
Because like the only other thing you can think of is that aren't there any other nice gay kids at your school? And it's like, yeah, he just doesn't understand Kevin's experience, but he's well meaning.
Yes, he doesn't do anything like, I don't know, very much like Alice. Maybe Fred.
Fred could be his like biggest competition for best parent. Anyways, Betty calls Veronica and is like, I don't know, this is still sus. He showed me his logbooks and that's suspicious. Veronica's like, okay, I'll like help you stake him out, but only because you're acting crazy and I need someone there to stop you. So they do a stakeout. They follow Sheriff Keller as he leaves late at night, and they follow him to a motel. And Betty, he like gets a duffel bag, and Betty says, that's his kill bag.
Duh. Right,
Betty's so out of pocket in this episode. She's like, he's clearly here to kill his next victim. So they like get out to go, I guess, watch him, try to stop him. He walks up to the door, knocks on the motel room door, and who opens it? Mayor McCoy. And they kiss.
Veronica was right. Dang. So yes, Veronica is feeling very a little gloaty because whatever, they figured it out. They're like at Pops, and she says, my women's intuition told me Sheriff Keller was having an affair. Which I have started saying women's intuition a lot more, and I'm like, you just don't get it. It's my women's intuition. But I definitely believe in women's intuition. So like, Veronica, I believe you. You did know the whole time. Slide.
Who is women's intuition? Kendall Roy.
He is women's intuition?
I'm sure he does. Or at least the people on Twitter think he does.
I believe he does.
Anyways, Betty says that Riverdale's list of sinners keeps growing. As they're debriefing about their night, Archie and Jughead walk in, and Veronica's like, oh, here are the boys, should we ask them to join? And she goes, actually no, it looks like they're having an intense bromant.
Yeah. They agree to keep the secret about the affair because they see no reason to tell Kevin, basically. Also we see Cheryl comforting Josie. It's like all the stories are kind of coming together at Pops.
The phone rings again. This time we get to see what happens there. Pop answers it. He like listens for a second and then puts it down, then announces to the whole restaurant and says it was the Black Hood calling and he failed, or the town failed his test, that they're all sinners and the reckoning is upon them.
Very true. I mean, look, to the Black Hood.
That's how the episode ends.
A lot of sin happened in the past 48 hours. Like, I feel like kind of fair.
So true. There is literally like a town-wide message to like be on your best behavior for 48 hours. And Jughead agrees to deliver a mysterious crate, likely full of drugs. We don't know. Cheryl continues to stalk Josie, give her threatening messages, and blame someone else for them. And Sheriff Keller continues to have an affair. Which is like, I don't know, just wait 48 hours. Just like, meet at the motel the next day.
None of them even like, were like, should we do this? Like, the Black Hood might be watching. None of them. They didn't even care.
Not a single person thought about it. So
no one moved. The Black Hood was like, I'm gonna have a reckoning if you guys send once, and they didn't even move. They were like, yeah.
They literally, yeah. No, they were like, they actually, not gonna lie, the whole town won the I don't give a fuck war this episode.
So Anything else about this episode?
It was fun. It was a fun episode. I love the format. It spiced things up in a very fun way. I liked that they like paired people off, and each like pairing had their own little storylines to go through. And I always love a moment where it's like, I love TV shows when they're like doing the same scenes from multiple perspectives. It's just very fun to me.
Yes. What was your quote of the episode?
Ooh. So many good ones. It was definitely, if the Black Hood weren't clearly an old white dude, I'd say you're a prime suspect.
There were so many good options. I think I gotta say out of my way, Bert and Ernie. But there were so many good ones, because like the Whitney one.
Whitney was good.
Intense bromance.
Intense bromance. Doing the twist. You're outdoing the twist was very funny to me.
Twist. My outfit. So I did not write down many outfits, but it has to be Cheryl's keel neck dress. She's out there slaying.
My outfit. The nameless drug lady with the Russian accent.
Incorrect, but okay.
It was fun. It was a different kind of look than we're used to from Riverdale.
It was something. Okay. Can we scale? Who should we do?
I don't know.
Let's do Sheriff Keller. He was relevant.
He was.
Sheriff Keller. Okay, so we're doing Kinsey Scale, which is the heterosexuality to homosexuality scale from 0 to 6. Our character today is Sheriff Keller. And, okay, you ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Okay. Okay. I said one, and Evan said zero.
I almost said one, but then I was like, no, if I'm being honest. The only thing that was like pushing me towards a one is that Sheriff Keller does have the body of a gay man.
Like Archie, like what Kevin says about Archie in the first episode or second episode.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, there's just something. His vibes are too good where I like don't want to give him a zero. I'm like, I like him. So, and I feel like I don't think he's gay by any means, but I feel like he is like, I don't know. He has like an understanding of it where I don't know. I just see a one.
I was like, it was really his like inability to relate to Kevin in any way whatsoever really puts me at a zero.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's ever done anything, but I feel like he like has a one. He's like spending too much time trying to look that good.
He is. He's spending a lot of time trying to look that good. At his age, while married.
At his age, while married. Well, probably for his mistress, but nice. Oh. Anything else?
I'll just say I understand what Mary McCoy sees. Nope, that's all.
This is a good episode. Thanks, folks.
Have a wonderful night. You can reach out to us. Let us know what your thoughts are on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. Hear what your favorite iconic fits of the episode or your favorite quotes of the episode are. You can reach out to us at Cheryl'sBWords@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at Cheryl's Bitches, or find us on Instagram at Cheryl's Bitches and TikTok at Cheryl's Bitches as well. So that is Cheryl'sBWords@gmail.com if you want to send us an email, and Cheryl's Bitches on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check us out, please.